M had to say to 3AW's Neil Mitchell.
We are determined to ensure that illegal boats don't get to Australia, and we will do whatever is reasonably necessary to protect our country from people smuggling and from the effect of this evil and damaging trade that costs lives.
But surely we wouldn't pay people smugglers. They're criminals.
Well, what we do is we stop the boats by hook or by crook, because that's what we've got to do, and that's what we've successfully done.
What Neil Mitchell said, Ian Hankey, surely we wouldn't pay them. They're criminals.
excuse me. What I think we're seeing here is that there's a bit of confusion over the way the PM has expressed himself, but clearly the position of the government has always been never to confirm or deny what we actually do. This has been a consistent position ever since Sovereign Borders was announced. On water matters, and this was allegedly an on-water matter. Now, certainly, you know, it seems to me the PM's language might have been a bit loose in this particular case, but from everything that I've seen subsequently to this, and I saw a report, I think, on the news last night, it's starting to look a bit more like it's a bit of a, not a beat-up, but maybe not factually correct. Some of the information seems to be coming through that someone alleges that X said this or that Y said that, and there was some money involved. And listen, it doesn't have, to me, smack of a great deal of veracity. Should the Prime Minister's language have been better? I think so, and it should have been consistent across the board. But having said that, he did not say that we were going to pay it, and that's why I'm a bit concerned about the way these stories are shaping up. It's the old denial story, refuse to deny. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was a cadet at the Age many, many seasons ago, that these sorts of stories were actually ruled out. It was deemed to be not particularly competent journalism to do the refuse to deny, because it's a very easy way to get a story up.
And yet, Shalala, the foreign minister in Indonesia is onto this. There is an investigation by police there. We'll get facts shortly.
But surely these allegations are serious enough for the Prime Minister to just say, no, we will never pay people smugglers, particularly given the narrative that the Prime Minister himself has constructed around this, which is that people smugglers are evil, that they peddle an evil trade. Surely these allegations are serious enough for him to just say, actually, you know what, we would never pay people smugglers. That's ridiculous. That's out of the question.
And I think
that's not what he said.
And correctly, I think what it gets back to is the point that I made earlier, that you never confirm or deny anything that we've done on water.
Is that reasonable? This is in our name, Tim.
I actually think that's part of the problem here. And really, I think the Prime Minister's got himself into a hole because of this absurd proposition that's been running over years that you just don't say anything about these operations. I mean, it's over-militarising it. I mean, you'd think that these border security operations were like as needed to be as secret as the deployment of the of tanks outside Tobruk or something, that it was a kind of crypto military operation that if any information leaked out about it, it would cause a defeat. And so he's got himself into that position and has ended up, if it's not true that there has been money paid, then why on earth wouldn't he have said it? And it's really the position he's got himself into.
Tim, I understand what you're saying, but it's the reason they do, you know, refuse to confirm or deny anything is because once you actually say, well, no, we didn't do that, then the next question is, well, you've done this, and your position can unravel.
Not a position about an individual operational matter. This is about bribing foreign criminals.
On that point, Shalala, I mean, if we are paying, is that a collusion with the criminal? I mean, we've characterised the people smugglers as criminals. Now it would seem that we may be giving them money. I mean, what's the moral position there, Shalala?
There's serious questions to be asked if this is found to be true. I mean, we need to look at international law as a start, not only our domestic law. And there's countless things on the Attorney General's website about bribing foreign officials and how that's against both domestic and international law. So really, we need to get to the heart of whether this happened, and then if it did, then there are serious questions.
I actually went and looked at the AG's website as well, Jonathan, and it's actually got a page about foreign bribery, and it says foreign bribery is a threat to democracy and the rule of law, and corrosive of good governance. I think that's right. Now, if you've got government agencies engaged in bribery, or paying off foreign racketeers, then it raises a very serious series of questions, about governance.
And let's just see what the reality of it is. I think we're getting well and truly ahead of the game.
Well, we're going to get to that reality very quickly.
Yeah, and then you deal with the reality of the situation. At this moment, we're indulging in a fairly steep hypothetical. Let's just see what the facts are before we actually...
The most disturbing aspect of that hypothetical is the boat was going to New Zealand anyway. Why are we forking out Australian cash?
Sorry, you're making an assumption that we are forking out money. Now, that's just not true.
Well, we have evidence that's been given to Indonesian officials that that's the case. And
all we've got is some information. Now, we've seen this before. Remember a few months ago, or last year, there was this case where allegedly Australian naval people were torturing supposed boat people.
That turned out to be an absolute
furphy. So what I'm saying is let's keep calm and relaxed and see what the facts are before we start making allegations about
bribery. And I think if you look back at that particular incident that you noted, the government was very, very strong in coming out and denying that flat out.
That's
and
right.
Obviously,
because
that's not an operational
exactly
matter. It's not an operational matter, and
exactly.
I agree with that. But the allegations
were so.
Don't
conflate the two issues like that.
Well, I just think that you know there are certain things where the government, you know, will willingly say this has not happened because the allegations are so serious.
I think you've had this is the latest in a long line of sort of our national mania about this issue that stretches back 15 years now. And I think, you know, if you look at the way foreign news services have covered this story, and it's been a very large international story.
Oh, exactly.
The idea that a sovereign government of a Western democracy would be buying off foreign criminals, it strikes the rest of the world, frankly, as fairly astonishing. So I think attempting to downplay it in a domestic context really isn't going to fly.
No.
It would be pretty easy to get rid of this if it wasn't the case.
But once you start unpeeling, taking the layers off the onions like this about the way we manage
The allegation is something that would be a criminal offence has been committed by Australian personnel. It's pretty serious.
And it will be investigated and is being investigated.
By the Indonesians. And Shalala, that's the other aspect here, the relationship between the two countries. And I suspect the Indonesians won't be wanting to do us any particular favours in withholding information as this goes on.
No, that's right. And obviously, Jokowi himself has got domestic pressure within his own government about the way Indonesia deals with Australia. It's been a long-running sort of issue about how that relationship works. So that the Indonesians themselves are facing domestic pressure too, and we can't discount the fact that this is political for both Indonesia and for Australia. So there is that element too, that we've got to look at what comes out of Indonesia in the context of it can be reported for its own domestic audience. So that's another factor here I think we need to look at.
Let's get quickly to an issue in which we all actually do disagree. On Outsiders this morning, Ian Hankey, Shalala Badora and Tim Lyons, and Bill Shorten. The opposition leader will front the Trade Union Royal Commission. Now, allegations that in his time as the secretary, state secretary in Victoria of the Australian Workers Union, that deals were done that disadvantaged the members of that union have drawn a pretty strident response from Bill Shorten.
Any implication that I'm not completely motivated and committed to getting a better deal for workers, for productive relations at companies, and for standing up for people is completely unfair and false. I've spent every day of my adult life representing workers. My record is there for all to see.
Furthermore,
the Labor movement has zero tolerance for any form of illegality, be it employer or employee or union rep. Full stop.
That's the problem, Tim Lyons. People are always talking over Bill Shorten. There seems to be an endemic issue here with unions favouring either money or political power over the interests of their members.
Oh, look, I'm in the cheap seats now on these questions, but...
You're free to talk.
I am free to talk. I wouldn't accept your characterisation of endemic. I think there have been some allegations in the last couple of weeks that, if true, are conduct that I wouldn't support and are not things that I'm familiar with in 20 years as a trade union official. So I think the things about companies paying for union memberships is completely unacceptable, and it's not something I was ever involved in, and it shouldn't happen. As to the agreements, I think it's important that people remember there are literally tens of thousands of enterprise agreements in Australia. There is still a very strong union wage premium for people. If you measure this, union members are paid on average in the whole economy about $125 a week more than anybody else. There's a 25% wage premium for women. Now, there's some individual agreements which don't appear to stack up, and that needs to be fixed. But the particular agreement that received a lot of coverage this week, which was a cleaning agreement, was actually a work choices era agreement. And there's a certain irony here, Jonathan, that a bunch of the people, including, I suspect, Ian, who were very big supporters of work choices, are now decrying this poor work choices, you know, these poor people that were caught by a work choices agreement. I mean, that's what the system was designed to do. Now, why it was
and yet
still on the
payments
books
here administered by the union. And
exactly. If remember, you did rail against work choices. If it did, I think it was 2004 actually that these sort of things were struck, and then it was renewed again in 2006. But you know, there is a certain irony. Let's just say it is work choices that this was struck under. And you're right. I actually do think that was a good piece of policy, having been there at the time myself. But there is a certain irony in that Mr. Shorten was actually involved in putting a deal together using work choices, which is now being alleged to have rorted some workers. There's a huge irony in that. After railing against it so much, he actually uses it as a tool. Very amusing.
Isn't the question here about whether this deal benefits workers or not? I mean, isn't that the whole heart
of this? That's fundamental, I think, yes.
The question is, are union members getting a better deal out of this? And if they're not, then there's, I don't want to keep saying serious questions raised, but there are serious questions raised if this doesn't help workers.
I think there's a couple of issues at play, though, as you point out there, Shalala. It is workers dudded. The other issue is about why union memberships were paid by the company, would appear, without people knowing it. And that is to increase the bargaining position of the AWU at Labor Party conferences. Now, that is another issue as well.
The awkward aspect, isn't it, of union politics and Labor Party politics is the way in which people get caught up in what's essentially power plays.
Look, I think some of that's been pretty overcooked. I mean, the amount of additional voting power you'd get within the ALP for having a couple of hundred people on the books is effectively zero, by the way the system works. So I think that particular issue has been overblown, and that connection has been overblown. But as I said, I find an idea that an employer would pay for phantom union tickets to be completely unacceptable. And as I say, it's not something I was...
Bit of a history with the AWU doing that, with non-financial members being counted. Remember that little scandal a few years ago with Big Bill Ludwig in Queensland about...
I'm sure this will come out in full detail at the Royal Commission. Just the final point, Shalala, I mean, that Bill Shorten appearing at that Royal Commission, is that a thing the opposition leader can easily survive?
Well, look, at the moment it's working very well for him because it gives him an out to not answer any questions about it. He was asked constantly
that
yesterday
won't last.
In the press conference. Well, it won't last, but as soon as he fronts it, he won't be able to do that anymore. Mm. But at the moment it's great for him because he keeps saying, well, look, I'm happy to front this. I've said many times I'm happy to front this Royal Commission, and until then I won't be saying anything.
Well, all of this will unfold. Time is against us here, but...
Just very,
very
quickly, I think it's instructive, though, that you've had former Prime Minister Gillard had to give evidence. Now you've had Bill Shorten. Now it was going to get Gillard. It didn't. I mean, let's see what actually happens.
We will see. Sadly, we have to leave it there because the dog is warming up as we speak. Thanks to Ian Heggie, Shalala Medora and Tim Lyons. But it is almost 6 to 10.